Dr. Larry Kaskel. You should listen to him if you know what's good for you. Of course, you should listen to him even if you don't know what's good for you. Here's the healthy skeptic, Dr. Larry Kaskel, MD.
Roughly 6 million kids in the U.S. have been diagnosed with ADHD, with that number doubling in the last 10 years. It's about time we try and find something besides medicine to help with this problem, because as you know, or know of someone, these meds definitely change a kid's personality and their overall well-being. My next guest is child psychiatrist Dr. Eugene Arnold, and we're going to talk about a potential breakthrough for kids suffering from ADHD. Dr. Arnold, let's talk about the statistics first. 6 million kids sounds like an enormous number. I'm going to imagine when you were younger in your career, you would have never imagined that number, that it's somehow been inflated.
Yeah, the percent is now quoted sometimes in double digits of school children. Whereas we used to think between 3 and 5%. I think some of the increase is mistaken diagnoses, but a lot of it is just increased recognition of the problem. And it's part of the issue here is where you set the threshold. ADHD is a little bit like blood pressure in the sense that the symptoms of ADHD are things that we all have a little bit, and they're normal. And it's normal to have a blood pressure. But if the blood pressure goes too high, that's a problem. And if you have too much of the kinds of things that make up ADHD, then that becomes a problem. So then it becomes an issue of where you set the threshold. You know, if you decide that anything over 80 diastolic is hypertension, then that would make a higher rate of hypertension diagnosis than if you set it at 90, because the people between 80 and 90 would be diagnosed in the one case and not in the other. So the number of symptoms that you require and how bad the symptoms have to be would make a difference on the rate of diagnosis.
You bring up an interesting point and a word, threshold, and I've been in practice for 25 years, and I see the threshold in many disease states change every few years when the so-called experts get together to create the guidelines, and then magically overnight, millions of more patients are diagnosed with a disease they didn't have the day before. So talk a little bit about that threshold. You say there is a normal part of being a child where, you know, kids, the fact that we expect kids to sit still for 8 hours a day seems a little ridiculous to me. But,
right. And,
you know,
have you seen... Of the, well, I just parenthetically, if I could throw this in, you mentioned sitting still for 8 hours. You know, one of the things that has been kind of lost in cost-cutting in schools is physical education. And the recess time and things like that, because that was always built in, because from the beginning, everybody recognized that kids need some, not only some breaks from sitting still, but also that the actual physical exercise is good for them. It's even good for brain function.
How long have you been in this field, Doctor? How long have you been dealing with this condition, and what have you seen over the years?
Treating and doing research with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder for 45 years, but under different names.
Right.
At one point it was called minimal brain dysfunction, then it was called attention deficit disorder and hyperkinetic disorder. In fact, it's still, in Europe, it's still called hyperkinetic disorder. And then the most recent term has stuck around since the 80s. Attention deficit hyperactivity disorder.
And what do you think is the true incidence of this disease, of kids that really have it, that not have been diagnosed by taking a test that was created by the drug companies that actually gets some neuropsych testing done? You know, what's the real incidence, and then what's the fake incidence?
Well, part of it depends on how you define having ADHD. If you just take the criteria in the diagnostic manual, it will be higher than if you do a lot of looking for possible causes. For example, if you find a vitamin D deficiency, which is one thing we test for in screening for this study that we're doing, if you test for that, you'll find a lot of kids who may be deficient in one or another vitamin or mineral, and by supplementing with that, correcting that deficiency, their symptoms might get better, and in some cases, they might get enough better that they don't need other treatment.
That would be an ideal treatment, at least for parents to do first before jumping to Adderall, right. Vyvanse, Ritalin, etc. What other dietary things have you learned over the years that contribute to this condition?
Well, for example,
would you say sugar? What about sugar?
Well, sugar is an interesting thing because the studies that set out to discover whether sugar makes behavior and attention worse failed for the most part to do so. A few of them did find that result. One of the problems, though, with those studies is that a lot of them used aspartame as comparison, and we now realize that aspartame can affect behavior, too. So it wasn't a good control condition. One of the most interesting things that I've seen in that regard was a study not in ADHD, but just in normal kids in a classroom. A guy by the name of Westness in England some years ago, and I think in the 90s, did a little comparison in which he took all the kids in a classroom, and he gave them either no breakfast or a breakfast of whole grain cereal and milk or a breakfast of the same number of calories as the cereal and milk, but all in sugar. And what he found was that with no breakfast, the kids' attention got twice as bad as with the cereal and milk breakfast. Of course, attention got worse over the course of the morning, and that's no news because ever since the one-room schools, we've known that kids pay better attention first thing in the morning than they do later in the day. And that's why they have math and reading first in school. But the ones who got the sugar, the same number of calories in sugar, actually did worse than the ones with no breakfast. So two lessons from this is, number one, breakfast is important. And number two, the kind of breakfast is as important as whether you get breakfast. So you need some protein in it.
Right. I've written numerous blogs on what the ideal breakfast should be to be well. And I'm happy to go out and say there's no such thing as a healthy cereal, that cereal should not be the way to start the day, that we should start the day with protein, a healthy fat, and treat it like any other meal. We don't need to start it with a box from the state of Michigan.
Right. Okay. Well, the not all cereals are the same. Some are better quality than others, and that's an important distinction. The highly colored ones, highly sweetened ones, are a real problem. The whole grains, I don't have as much problem with the whole grain ones. But anyhow, another issue is fish oil. There's pretty good evidence that you can get a small but significant benefit from fish oil, but it takes about 3 months to show the benefit. And the reason the fish oil is probably useful is that the omega-3 fatty acids in it are actually part of the brain brain structure.
Dr. Arnold, we're gonna have to leave it there. We'll talk some more later. I'm Dr. Larry Kaskel, the Healthy Skeptic, on Radio MD, reminding you never to listen to anybody else. Don't let them do your thinking for you. Stay skeptical, my friends, and stay well.